Is it just me, or does anyone else have this problem that whenever you plug in something USB, you always try and plug it in the wrong way around first?
Oh, yeah. Every single time.
It only goes in one way, and I never get it in right first time.
Sometimes I even flip it, and it still doesn't work, because somehow I flip it, like, twice or something.
Unless I make a point of, like, looking first to check that it's lined up right, if I just go, oh, you know, it's 50-50, it never comes out my way. It's really annoying.
This is the PC Gamer Podcast, episode 204 for Thursday, December 17th, 2009. On today's show, a victor is declared in the Team Fortress 2 war between the demo men and soldiers, Valve announces the first piece of DLC for Left 4 Dead 2, the VGAs bring some welcome new game announcements, and Microsoft finally launches a game download store, but nobody cares. Hi, everybody. I'm your host and PC Gamers Reviews editor, Dan Stapleton. With me today are our associate editor, Evan Lottie.
Hey there.
Our contributing editor and associate editor of the official World of Warcraft magazine, Josh Augustine.
Heyo.
Our intern squad, Eric Belsas.
For the record, I am Team Demo Man.
And Prentice Getty.
I echo that.
Well, I guess current PC Gamer alumni and current Big Shot movie writer, Gary Whitta.
Hello, where's the festivity? No one's saying Happy Holidays or Merry Christmas. I'd like to say Merry Christmas to all of PC Gamers, listeners, and readers.
Bah humbug.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
Yeah. It's California, we have to say Happy Holiday.
Our producer, Andy Bauman.
Happy Holidays!
Happy now, Gary?
Are you I'm satisfied? Happier.
Okay, there we go.
It's all a bit like pulling teeth to get some holiday cheer out of you guys.
This may be our final podcast of the year because next week we will be in the office, but we will be really trying to finish the magazine before vacation. So we may not have time. Don't get mad at us if this is our last one of the year. So let's make this one count, shall we?
Well, this time next week is Christmas Eve. You guys gonna be working on Christmas Eve?
Yes.
No wonder you're saying bah humbug.
Yes. Yeah. We have a magazine to get out, and deadlines wait for no man and no holiday.
Oh.
About a week ago, the big mysterious thing, and I guess they announced this like right after we recorded our podcast, but Valve started a war in Team Fortress 2 between the demo man and the soldier. Whichever class got the most kills over the period of a week would unlock a special new gizmo to use to further their victory over the other classes. Evan, why don't you update us on that situation?
It's been amazing, frankly. I mean, with Valve and their updates for Team Fortress 2, I mean, they've been having incrementally more fun almost with these. If you remember the spy versus sniper update, they kind of created a little bit of backstory and like made things interesting where they revealed the sniper and then suddenly the spy came in and he stabbed the sniper in the back and they revealed new items for him as well. Well, this was even more of a big deal for Valve. Where they're going as far as to, I mean, the way the war worked was every player, if you were a demo man or a soldier, you had a counter up in the corner of your screen to sort of track how many of the opposite class you'd killed throughout all of your sessions. And that would add to a aggregate total. And whoever killed more of either soldiers or demos would win an extra unlockable weapon or item. We're not sure what it is yet. It's probably going to be revealed today. And
wasn't it revealed during a 1 versus 100 game on Xbox Live? Or am I just crazy?
I didn't hear that.
That would be weird since Team Fortress 2 is pretty much irrelevant on Xbox.
That's what I was thinking, but I saw some Twitters about it or something. I don't know. Strike it from the record.
That's strange. You know, within the past week, there's been about 12 million total kills on either side, and the margin as of this afternoon was less than 25,000 between each side. So we think the soldier's going to win, but they haven't completely announced. No, soldier's awesome. Come on. But it's really been fantastic just to sort of wrap everything up. They developed like 3 multi-page comics for this update that introduced new characters and backstories. They had a propaganda contest where people could send in their your best like World War II style propaganda for or against the soldier or demo. And they awarded, they're going to give these people special in-game items. Actually, PC Gamer UK's Tom Francis, who made a prediction on his own personal website about one of the soldier items and was very close to the truth of what it would be. Valve is making him a special version of that item. Like, they're just going out of their way to please everybody and have tons of fun and send out special prizes for the propaganda updates. And it's really been kind of a big celebration of the game itself, more than just a very cool update and new items and new content.
They're getting more creative with the updates, not just pumping out mechanically pumping out an update for each class. They're building up like the community around those updates, rather than just producing content.
Exactly. Like you can see, this is more like I'm hoping is like a more refined focus on Valve's emphasis on community. If you remember the Spy update, one of the things they did, this is really kind of obscure, but so they revealed the Spy items, one of those like Mad Magazine style, like, send in your money and get this secret Spy Watch item, like catalog. They did like a demo of that kind of ad. I guess there were people that actually sent in money for that. Like they thought it was a real thing. They printed it out and they sent it to an address and they sent them like these special exclusive postcards of one of the characters in the game. And now those are on sale in their store. Like just going out of their way to do these, all these like very cool, exciting things for the game that really celebrates the community and celebrates their characters. It's really unique and it's fantastic.
I think this is all great. I mean, I love it. I think it's brilliant that Valve does this. I think that they don't earn any income off Team Fortress 2, right? I mean, there's no subscription, there's no advertising. It's just something that they continue to do for the goodwill of the player base, unless I'm missing something. But just specifically on this issue with the war, how did this, am I missing something, but how did this not completely screw up the game during this period where like wasn't it just all demo men and soldiers running around, because everyone would want to be playing those classes to contribute to the kills, right?
I mean, there's certainly at least double the amount that you would expect. And it was a little messy. I played a few matches and it was kind of ridiculous and sometimes frustrating. But at the same time, like, there are certain classes that excel. Like this spy is really good at killing both of those classes in most situations. Getting behind the soldier and stabbing in the back. Medics were extremely valuable during that time. So if you love playing a medic, that was like a time for you to shine. So yes and no, but mostly yes.
I mean, I guess we kind of saw that problem anyway. Any time that they introduce these new weapons for any time a class gets a class update, you know, you see a ton of those people running around when they were trying to farm the achievements, you know, when that's how the system worked. And it was, you know, it did kind of skew the game. But just overall, I'm just amazed that Valve does this. I can't think of any other game outside of the MMO space where it's kind of inherent in the design that you have to keep, you know, updating it. I can't think of any other game that is evolved as to the degree that Valve continues to evolve this game. It's pretty impressive.
You know, I almost think that screwing up the game like that is kind of part of their plan, because it does freshen things up. I mean, how many games like this, with the exception of like Counter-Strike, do people just keep coming back to for years and have it be like the same exact experience for years? That I think they like that variety. It's like, you know, it's something different. If you don't like it, it's over in a week. Then it's back to normal pretty much.
Right. I mean, it just buys into their idea, which they've been saying for a long time, is their games as platforms, not just static products. And actually, the one other feature we forgot to mention was they introduced a crafting system. Like they had an item drop system that they introduced in the last update, where you can get these random hats and the unlockables unlock that way instead of through achievements. And now, I guess, like if you're accruing items that you already have or you don't like, you can combine them to create items that you do like. And it's like an MMO, I guess. It's insane.
Playing devil's advocate here, but sometimes I worry that, you know, because it's not just a static game anymore. It changes so much that I wonder sometimes that there's that cost of, even though the game is evolving and theoretically getting better every time, that every time they make a major change, there's a certain portion of the player base that just liked it the way it was, you know? Right. And I kind of feel like, you know, you may, you know, alienate, or people are forced to constantly, you know, you lose a certain degree of a comfort level with the game because they're always kind of changing your surroundings. Like I haven't played Team Fortress 2 in a while. I haven't played since the last couple of updates. I kind of feel like the next time that I jump back into the game, which will probably be early next year, it's kind of like if you miss a soap opera, if you don't watch a soap opera for a year and you come back, it's suddenly it's like, oh, what happened? Who's this guy? He's dead now. Like, it takes a lot to catch up. It's not, when I come back, like 6 months from now, it's not going to be the same game that I left. And I think that's potentially good, but also potentially kind of weird.
Yeah, they're kind of fixing what ain't broke in some ways.
I can definitely see how that would be intimidating. It would be intimidating to me if I played Dawn of War 2 or something and I came back and there's an entirely new race that I had to deal with in multiplayer and so on. I do hear a lot of people, especially like people that play competitively, that want this sense of like a vanilla TF2 that they can easily turn on and off, or configure servers to be that way, where there's no like unlockable weapons, no special doodads, etc., that they can just play the game as it originally was. Yeah,
can't you do that on a dedicated server?
I want to say so. I haven't checked in a while. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that generally happens with every game. You know, you saw it with Team Fortress Classic. You know, there's always, you know, kind of the old fuddy-duddies, the curmudgeons who just like the original game the way that it was. I may, in fact, be one of those people. It's a delicate balancing act, and this is why I have so much respect for people that design MMOs. And I think it's the same principle here with Valve, even though Team Fortress 2 seems on the surface a really simple game. That class balance is an incredibly delicate and fragile thing to maintain, and it's not, and they didn't rest on the laurels and just say, wow, this is really hard, but we actually got like, you know, eight different classes and it all kind of balances out and it works. You know, having done that, they keep making little changes to try and make it better without breaking it, and that's a really challenging thing to do.
And the fact that they've done it successfully is very impressive.
Yeah,
absolutely. I mean, to have a character class in your game that can turn invisible and kill people instantly and still have it be fun and, you know, be interesting and not break the game, that by itself is kind of an achievement, I think.
Well, I guess the next piece of news is also Valve-related. They have just announced their first piece of Left 4 Dead 2 DLC, which is called The Passing, scheduled for release early in 2010. It takes place between the first and second campaigns of Left 4 Dead 2. And the big gimmick is that it will also have the survivor cast from Left 4 Dead 1 meeting the survivor cast from Left 4 Dead 2. So they're going to have, I guess, eight survivors running around. They don't say that you can have eight players playing as survivors, but that would be kind of crazy.
Yeah.
I don't think that's going to happen. I sent Valve some questions immediately when the press release went out, and we haven't gotten responses back yet. But I mean, when you think about just the map design alone that would have to take place to accommodate double the amount of players, I don't think so.
It would be interesting fray.
Now that the game is out, because I haven't really been following it that much, I am definitely going to get it and play it, but I've, you know, been a little bit busy. But I'm curious to know, given that there was all this controversy, you know, before the game came out, with people saying, oh, Valve were just rushing it out really quickly, and there was this whole boycott and all this controversy, did Valve kind of successfully silence all those critics with the finished game? Did they shut everyone up with what they eventually put out?
I think they did. I mean, there are people that are just going to stick to their guns and you know, say this isn't enough for me. And you know, that's fine. I mean, some people do have very high standards, and that's fair. But I mean, I think this game is absolutely worth the asking price for the amount of content they delivered.
It always felt like a weird criticism to me anyway. Like, I don't know how anyone could possibly level the credible criticism at Valve that they're just interested in rushing stuff to market, because they've clearly shown with Half-Life that they'll wait years and years, you know, to release a product that they're happy with. And I think it was a different case with Left 4 Dead 2, that they felt like, you know, in this particular case, we can do a sequel that we're happy with relatively quickly. And
yeah, I mean, I didn't think of this analogy until later, but it's almost as if, like, and this sounds ridiculous, and that's kind of an expression of what it was, I think. Like, if there's a community of, like, very fervent, like, Ford Taurus 2008 model enthusiasts, and they were extremely upset that the 2009 model had better air conditioning and better rims and better heated seats or whatever. And Ford is just trying to make a better car. You know, they're trying to do what they do in a better way. And like Dan said, it's worth the asking price. It's an excellent game. It's an excellent piece of content. Scavenge mode is fantastic. Hands down, it's the best new addition to the game. So it's already been on sale. I mean, for that Black Friday sale, I think you can get it for like under $40. It was like $37 through Steam.
Getting back to the DLC itself, it's supposed to add, the passing will add new areas for survival, versus, and scavenge. It will introduce a new cooperative challenge mode of play, which that's kind of vague. There's some kind of new mode. And it will also include a new uncommon common, which is like the, like common zombies, except they've got like a special ability. There's some that are in CDC hazmat suits. Yeah. and they're fireproof. So there's a new version of those guys. There's a new melee weapon and a new gun.
So since we do have, you know, both casts in, what about something where, you have four of them at the generator, like the scavenge mode, doing that. But the time limit is based on the other four fighting through the level to get to you, to save you. Or some way where basically all eight are on the same map, but they have different paths. Or they're on the same map and they're working towards a central goal, and, you know, but they both have to work together, but it isn't eight people running together in a circle. So the map design can stay relatively the same.
I'd like to see something like that, like a very, like, scripted, like, interestingly put together finale or crescendo. But when you think about it, I mean, this is this is a huge opportunity for story in the game. I mean, in one of the complaints or just something we've observed throughout the entire series of Left 4 Dead is it's kind of light on story. Like, it's light on exposition about, like, what actually happened with the infection, like, where it came from, what the status of the world is. We don't know any of those things, and it's not necessarily important, but we're going to conceivably learn, you know, what happened to the other four survivors, how they got there, where they're going, what their objective is. And since it's taking place after Dead Center, the first campaign in Left 4 Dead 2, I'm thinking it might be on the road, because you break out of that mall in the car, and when you arrive at Dead Carnival, the second campaign, your car is broken down, and there's too many cars on the freeway. So conceivably, you're either making a pit stop somewhere or you meet them on the road. I'm really curious to see what they're going to do with that.
I don't know if this is anything they fixed in the second one, but it just felt like four totally kind of non-contiguous chapters that were just all about escaping. And for a company that usually is very good at, you know, kind of dynamic in-game storytelling, I just felt like there was no kind of character development or revelations about, you know, what had happened to the world or why, or a sense of kind of being part of a larger thing. The game started kind of in the middle of everything, like, you know, the infection had already happened and you just had to get from place to place, and I was a little bit disappointed they just didn't feel like it had the same storytelling qualities that I usually expect from single player Valve games.
Well, the second one is very much the same way. It's a deliberate thing on their part where they're trying a different approach to storytelling, and for a lot of people it works. The thing that interests me most about having the two groups of survivors intersect is no matter what, they're going to have eight human characters on the map. So they're either going to be player controlled or they're going to be AI controlled, or they could just, if they were going to be lazy about it, it could be like you're playing as the new survivors and you see the old survivors in the distance and they need your help to get across a bridge or something, and you have to, you know, hold the line. They could just be kind of like almost a cutscene that plays in the background while you're fighting.
What are they doing? Are they doing like the expansion pack thing from Half-Life where it's supposed to be happening at the same time, and you'll kind of see the survivors going through scenes that you remember from the first game?
It doesn't seem like it. It seems like that they would have to be doing a new area, because there was nothing in the first game that took place in anywhere near geographically.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Left 4 Dead 2 is definitely like at least a week after the end of Left 4 Dead 1. I'm sort of hoping in terms of the meeting that it's like that scene in Shaun of the Dead where Sean and Ed and his sort of party and his mom of survivors crosses paths with his ex-girlfriend and they're all doppelgangers for each other.
Right.
They're like, Hi. I like that.
Yeah. But so the only worrisome part about this is that the press release, the last line is saying pricing will be announced closer to launch. The best case scenario is that they'll say it's free for PC and for purchase on Xbox, like it was for Crash Course on Left 4 Dead. But worst case is that Valve has finally started charging for PC DLC. What do you think? What do you guys think? Is it going to be free, or is the free ride over?
It's not going to be free. If it's at least four chapters, which is what the usual campaigns are, and they're not making it sound like it's a Crash Course size free DLC. It'll be paid for. It'll be under $7 or something on PC.
Do you think it'll be worth it?
Yeah. I mean, new mode, new weapon, new melee weapon. Yeah.
Definitely.
I think this is going to be an interesting social experiment on the PC side, where, especially with Valve, you know, they've conditioned players to getting so much for so little that I think there's been a little, I think, you know, they've probably inadvertently bred a little bit of an entitlement culture on the PC side. And when they start charging for things, people are going to object because they're just used to getting all this stuff for free.
Oh, they definitely haven't. I mean, that's a problem they ran into with Left 4 Dead 2 that caused so much, you know, angst amongst their community is that, hey, we want free stuff. We've come to expect free stuff from you. But yeah, this will probably have the same kind of, you know, I'm not buying it, I was expecting to get this for free kind of uprising. But, you know, given Valve's, you know, history of producing quality stuff, Anything they ask you to pay for is generally really well done. So I think it'll probably.
Yeah, it's funny. It's funny how that argument never settles, though. It's like you think it would be a good argument to make, like, hey, if this stuff that we give you for free is so good, imagine how cool the stuff is that we want you to pay for. But that doesn't. It never seems to beat this age old psychology that it's really really hard to get people to transition from free to a paid system,
especially when they're crazy internet people.
They'll just make it cost like 800 zombie points, and then it'll be like Microsoft points.
Yeah.
I'd like to officially go on the record and hope for zombies on motorcycles like Resident Evil. That would be awesome. Because if it's going to be on the road, I want to be sitting in the trunk of the car sniping them as zombies are peeling up on motorcycles trying to get in my trunk.
I kind of doubt that they would invent a whole new driving mode of gameplay, because that would be really ambitious and completely change the game.
You can't kill my hope, Dan.
Oh yes, I can, and I will. Spike TV VGA Awards were this past week as well. The relevant stuff for the PC crowd were that Dragon Age won Best PC Game and Best RPG. Rocksteady was the Studio of the Year, thanks to Batman Arkham Asylum. Modern Warfare 2 won for Best Action Game and Best Multiplayer, and Street Fighter 4 for Best Fighting Game. There were a few that made me giggle. X-Men Origins Wolverine won for Best Cast, with Hugh Jackman winning Best Performance by a Human Male, and and Megan Fox for Best Performance by a Human Female in Transformers: Revenge of the Fallen.
Sponsored by Mountain Dew.
Right. Like,
kind of, it was kind of the absurd fun of the Spike Awards that they are definitely geared towards the wannabe celebrity Hollywood angle. They have a lot of awards that are just geared towards getting celebrities to show up on the night so they can have a glamorous ceremony.
I played both of those games, and neither of them were anywhere near. And I don't really understand the requirement for a performance by a human male or female, because like all these voice acting performances are performed by humans.
But I think they mean in terms of the character played. Like, if someone played an alien, then that would be a different character or something. I don't know.
I'm still not convinced that Megan Fox is human.
In terms of the more legit awards, do you agree with the best PC game? Do you think Dragon Age is the best PC game of the year?
I think it is very deserving of that. You would have a hard time arguing with Dragon Age. A couple of better bits out of VGAs were the game announcements. A bunch of publishers, took the opportunity for a large TV audience to announce some new games. Specifically, the sequel to Batman Arkham Asylum was announced. It hasn't been named yet. Personally, I hope they don't call it Arkham Asylum 2, because that would feel like it would limit it to being in the asylum again.
Especially since it looks from the trailer like it's going to be in the city.
Yeah, the teaser shows a few scenes from what looks like Gotham City. And that has like the Joker with a really wrinkly face, which is kind of a reference to the ending of the first one. And
yeah, that's kind of a tough marketing challenge for them, because the franchise now is kind of, at least in terms of the title of the game, is locked into that location. Mm-hmm. So if they didn't set it in Arkham Asylum, it would be kind of weird to have it be called Arkham Asylum 2.
Yeah, and they say Arkham has moved is the tagline. So yeah, so I mean it'll probably be they've got super villain prisoners locked up in downtown Arkham.
You see, this is why I should be working in game development. It could be a breakout, and it's a breakout from Arkham Asylum, but now they're all over the city, and you're going to round them up.
Right. But I don't know. I kind of hope that they just kind of think of Batman as the brand and have a new title after the colon, because Arkham Asylum 2 just, it sounds too limiting. And it feels like I'll be expecting a little bit too much more of the same. I want more of the same action from Batman Arkham Asylum, because I love that, but I don't want more exploring the same area. And if I hear that, it doesn't get me excited.
Yeah, but what if it's a prison break where it's still Arkham Asylum themed, because that's where they all came from, but they could be all over the city.
which is great. I mean, in that case, just call it, you know, Batman Prison Break or, you know, something like that. I'm just saying that
you should never work in marketing because you're basically just taking the title of the game that sold like a million copies and flushing it down the toilet and hoping that people will recognize that it's the sequel to the game that they loved.
I think people will, though.
Yeah, I mean, I think the Batman is what does that. I mean, that is the Batman game franchise right now.
Yeah, but there's been a ton of shitty Batman games as well. How do I know that this is the sequel to the one that I really liked?
But nobody remembers any of those because they were shitty.
Okay.
So I like the Arkham Asylum is, you know, dominating the Batman game consciousness right now, I think. But yeah, they don't pay
for the most successful Batman thing of all time didn't even have the word Batman in the title. So
that's true. We'll find it.
See, I think we can find a compromise here than just go the Modern Warfare route, where we can be Batman, Arkham Asylum 2, Jailbreak.
There you go.
Wait, to confirm, Rocksteady's doing the sequel thing, right?
Yes, they are. The other announcement was the Spec Ops game, which I guess they showed some trailers. It's called Spec Ops The Line, which is a modern military shooter set in Afghanistan.
It's in Dubai, actually.
Oh, that's right. It's Dubai. I'm sorry.
It's okay.
That's war in Dubai that I didn't know about?
There will be.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess they conceived of that before Dubai went bankrupt, so. And finally, there was an announcement for Star Wars The Force Unleashed 2, which probably won't be coming to the PC anytime soon because we had to wait a year for Aspyr to port it over to the PC, or port the first one over to the PC. But it may eventually come over here. The first one was eh. So we're not really missing anything. Other big piece of news, well, you know, sort of big, that in theory a big piece of news, is that Microsoft has finally launched their Steam competitor with Games for Windows Games on Demand. And
competitor. That's good.
And nobody cares. they just have a handful of games up there. They've got Battle Station Pacific, Dirt 2, Fallout 3, Fuel, Juiced 2, Kane and Lynch, Red Faction Guerrilla, Resident Evil 5, Section 8, Shadowrun, Street Fighter 4, and Viva Pinata Plus. They have a free game that you can go and download called Tinker. And Josh, you went and downloaded that, right? Oh, not Josh, sorry, Eric, you downloaded it.
Yes, because I love achievements too much, and there is 200 gamer score for free.
Or. what was the experience of using the store like? Was it anywhere near as easy as Steam or Impulse or even EA Downloader?
No, there's like three or four steps to downloading every game. And so you highlight what game you want, and then you click download, and then it downloads, but then you have to come back and you have to hit an install button, and then it installs.
Does it?
But then to play it, you have to open up your games menu. I'm not sure how it works on XP, because that doesn't have a games menu, but it's a little more complicated than a good old Steam.
It must be a weird position for Microsoft. I feel like they don't really, unless they dominate the market from the beginning, like they do with, you know, the OS and they do with the Office software, it seems like they don't really know how to play catch up. They don't know how to come into the business in second place and really make a dent. I mean, they never made a dent with the iPod. They gave up all that ground. You know, they tried a couple of times with the Zune. That's always going to be,
Xbox,
second place.
Yeah.
No, actually, no, I'll give you that. But the Xbox is kind of the exception, but certainly like with the Zune and now with this, you know, Steam came in and established itself. I know at this point, it's really hard to imagine Microsoft, you know, making any kind of a dent or making this a race between them and Steam as like the dominant place to go get your games.
Right. This is really half-assed. It's kind of sad. And, you know, because, I mean, Steam, I think, you know, was successful because Valve, you know, kickstarted it with Half-Life 2. You know, they put out a great game that you could only get if you install Steam. And, you know, at the time, Steam was kind of a hassle too. But, you know, they kickstarted it, and Microsoft is not developing or publishing any PC games now. So they have no hook. They're nothing to draw people in.
Viva Pinata.
No.
$10.
The one thing that they could put on there is the GTA 4 DLC in the future.
I don't think so.
Kind of worth it. I say worth it.
That would not be a real hook. I mean, you can, for one thing, you can get that on the consoles. So it's not the only place you can get it. Mm-hmm. Half-Life 2 for a long time you could only get on Steam.
Yeah, the biggest hook they could do for me would be to build it into the OS and have it have the buddy list so that anyone that has Windows automatically has this, and then I know all my friends are going to be on the system. That's the one thing they could do. Other than that, I mean, they aren't going to do Steam better than Steam.
Yeah, and if they could somehow tie the Microsoft Messenger even into the Games for Windows stuff, so that it you have a persistent buddy list that you can see on the desktop without launching a game, you can see who's playing. It's basic, you know, stuff that Steam has made into basic functionality that you really can't have a service like this and expect to compete with Steam without. But how is Tinker?
Quite well done, actually. Like it's pretty simple. But I some of the puzzles really got to me. It's sort of like you're guiding a little robot through traps and puzzles. For free? Yeah, it's enjoyable.
Okay. Well, so it's not a total loss. I mean, you do get something out of it. You get a decent free game.
Yeah, yeah. Which I guess they're packing in with Windows 7 Ultimate now. I heard something like that.
Now let's take us a few questions.
Hey, that's the Gamer Podcast. This is Danny from San Maria, California. I just got home from work and opened up your Star Wars The Old Republic cover issue to find the Star Wars calendar. This is the most awesome thing you guys have given me ever. Anyway, just want to let you guys know that. And keep up the good work. You guys are awesome.
Well, we're glad you liked it. That was a lot of hard work by our art director, Dan Fitzpatrick, to put that together. So we're glad to hear you appreciate it.
Yeah, I actually agree, because I didn't know that was coming, because as some of you guys know, I'm working downstairs on the WoW magazine now. So
and we don't tell Josh anything.
No. I try to ask them information, but I'm dead to them.
We spit on him.
And when I opened that up, I was so excited, because I'm a Star Wars fan too, as I assume this guy is, and it's so exciting. So now I have it hanging on my little wall by my desk now. I'm flipping through. I'm waiting for like the next month, but I kind of pretended it was February anyways, because I got kind of tired and wanted to see what the next month was.
Yeah, hey, so when is the WoW magazine coming out?
Oh, it's going to printers today. Oh my gosh. Logan just gave me a heart attack. I'm sorry. Yeah, it's going to printers today. We pulled a late night last night and got final approvals on everything. It's fantastic.
So you can expect that in your mailbox sooner or later. Sooner rather than later, I should say. Next question.
Hey, dudes. I want to comment on all the belly aching in the community about the difficulty of Dragon Age on PC, because I remember the old days of PC gaming, and it's like ever since consoles have been taking some of the PC market, games on the whole have become less complex, less challenging, and I find it refreshing to have a game as challenging as Dragon Age. And I think the reason that BioWare probably made the PC version more difficult was because they know that PC gamers can handle it and that we are generally a more hardcore crowd. What do you think?
Well, I think games were harder way, way back in the day, even before Baldur's Gate or whatever.
You're talking about like Mega Man and things like that.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
Well, I mean, I think that's more like, of like
Battletoads.
There was less nuance available. I mean, when you're working with sort of a grid with tiles, there's only so much you can do, I think. But I would agree with that. But it was refreshing to me as well. I mean, to really be challenged and it helped that I sort of had a frame of mind that I didn't really, you know, push the game away or want to lower the difficulty level. It was refreshing, I guess, just like the guy said, yeah.
Has there been a lot of complaining about the difficulty level? I've heard it mentioned a lot, like noted that there, you know, it is a hard game. I haven't heard a lot of people saying this is too hard. It sucks. And a lot of that is, and like it would be invalid even if they did say that, because there is an easy difficulty setting that you can set it to if you are upset by it being too hard. I don't know if it's really been a big issue, but on the other hand, I do agree that it is nice to have challenging games that haven't been super watered down to be accessible to a wider audience. I mean, it's nice to, I love to be challenged by games, and you know, I personally, you know, kind of refuse to notch a game down to easy because I am a stubborn bastard, but I just don't want to let it beat me. But yeah, it's definitely a throwback to older.
I mean, hey, can I ask a question?
Absolutely.
It's because it's question time. I've got a spot opening up on my Netflix list. What should I get next? Inglourious Basterds or The Hangover?
I've only seen Inglourious Basterds out of those two, but I loved it. It was a lot of fun.
I'll get that. That's all. Thanks, PC Gamer.
I was going to say, there's a difference between combat difficulty in Dragon Age and rolling a character that you've broken in Icewind Dale so many years back. And I think that stuff like that, you know, kind of tanned our hides back then. We're like, oh my God, I don't want to go through that again. Maybe that's why the console people switched over to consoles, because it's so much easier to use. But I don't know. I appreciate the fact that you can't really break your character in Dragon Age, yet the combat is still intense and gratifying when you can ninja pause your way through it.
Well, I don't know. I was on the shelf about Dragon Age, and the difficulty is actually what I heard a lot of people, not just in reviews, but like friends playing it on Facebook, you know, who had gone out of their way to make a status update, go, oh, Dragon Age is so hard. And that put me off, because I these days, as I get older, my reflexes slow down, my brain starts to calcify. I don't know what's going on. But you know, generally, if people complain about a game being too difficult, I know it's going to be too difficult for me and I won't enjoy it. If people complain about a game being too easy, that probably means it's the porridge is just right for me and I'll get it. So yeah. that kind of put me off Dragon Age.
Well, I got myself stuck in Planescape Torment, which is another BioWare game previously, and kind of in the same vein where you have to pause a lot and really, you know, think about your moves. But I got totally stuck and I did not want to restart. That game was too hard for me.
Like I said, there is an easier difficulty option for the combat that will probably suit you better. But I mean, there is definitely something to be said for making games that are not too hard. I mean, getting something that is not too hard but not too easy is a difficult job.
Yeah,
it's, you know, it goes back to that balancing question, and it's you know, arguably a make or break factor of game design.
Well, I mean, you're not going to want to pay and give up your precious free time in a game that's just going to kick your ass over and over, unless, you know, that's the point of the game and it's one of those. But you know, sticking to, you know, the Dragon Age at hand here, it's going to be satisfying. It's got to be satisfying, and it can't just be a relentless, like, frustrating fest, or else you're just going to be like, why am I wasting my time with this?
Right.
I think one of the big challenges in game design over the next few years is going to be finding ways through adaptive difficulty or being able to adjust the difficulty on the fly, whatever it is, finding ways to basically improve kind of gamer completion ratios. And that is to say, you know, that you actually finish more of the games that you play. I don't know what my percentage is or what the average percentage is, but I probably don't finish all the way to completion, you know, more than half of the games that I play. And as games become more narratively focused and there's more, you know, kind of stories that are working towards, you know, a big payoff at the end, they basically become more like books and movies. I think there's going to be a greater need to allow players to get the whole experience. I don't find it satisfying if I don't finish reading a book or if I don't see a movie all the way to the end. I want to see how it ends. And I find that frustrating when in a game I may not be able to see how it ends because it's just too hard to get there.
I'm kind of like obsessive about, like, when I start a game, if the game doesn't really annoy me, I'm almost certainly going to finish it. So I will get really frustrated if I can't get to the end of it.
Yeah, I want to get your guys' take on this, but like, I totally appreciate the viewpoint of this guy. Like, I agree, Dragon Age is a really refreshing game to play on the PC. Like, it's just like, yes, like, finally I have all these different slots to get my items, blah, 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 all that good stuff. But also, we're talking about Arkham Asylum earlier. That game was one of the first, like, consoleized games that I really appreciated the design. Even everything was kind of easy and set up for you, especially, you know, talking about the gargoyles and all that stuff. But it was still one of the best experiences of the year.
It wasn't necessarily super easy, and that's another game where you can jack up the difficulty level. And for one thing that it does when you turn up the difficulty level in that game is to take away the warnings when somebody's about to hit you. So not only can you take less damage, but it's much harder to determine when to use the counter to throw somebody. So it's much harder. I was playing through. I didn't finish on hard difficulty, but it was challenging.
Hey, PC Gamer, just wondering, Team Devil or Team Soldier?
Rage quit.
Fabulous. Team Soldier.
Was that actually an official rage quit sound effect?
I guess so. We should reutilize that, Andy. get the copyrights to it. I'm all about Team Soldier. I think playing the soldier in TF2 is really kind of reinvigorated like the thrill of rocket jumping and how fun and how challenging and how nuanced it can be. It's a great class, and demos are for suckers.
well, I could argue, to put it in the words of the official Team Fortress 2 blog, the easiest team to play pulls ahead in the kills. I love the demo man. I think there's so much nuance to the demo man, where placing your stickies just right and it has the equivalent of rocket jumping. It has sticky jumping. I'm totally team demo.
Team demo. Yeah.
One-eyed black Irishman. How can you resist that?
Just Scotsman.
He's Scottish.
Oh, Scotsman. My apologies to the Irish and the Scots and everyone in between.
You are going to get your ass kicked, Josh.
I've got to say, I'm really not looking forward to facing demos. Now, one of their new melee weapons is a shield that they can use to charge, sort of presumably like a charger in Left 4 Dead 2, where you can just rush forward kind of without any control and mash into people. That's going to be interesting.
Yeah, try and rocket jump out of there, sucker.
The guys, back when you were playing, which did you play as?
Well, I mean, I still play. I've taken a break recently. You know, when you say back when you were playing, but
I just know you're not playing.
You mean of those two?
Yeah,
I think I probably played more of the demo, just because I found the soldier frustrating in the sense I just didn't like the slow movement, the slowness of that class. I like to be able to zip around a little bit more. But beyond that, I don't. If you look at my time played, I think it's like Pyro is number one, then Engineer, and I think Demo might come after that.
Oh, there you have it. Sounds like Demo wins.
Hey, you want to hear the top 10 YouTube videos of the decade?
That would hurt my brain.
Don't depress me.
You wouldn't be that surprised. Amazingly, Star Wars Kid was only number two.
Panda Sneeze. Really?
Panda Sneeze is number four.
Oh. Wow. All right, what's number one?
Hold on, I'll do them in reverse order for you. Number 10. Leave Britney alone.
Okay. Nice. I weep for our generation.
Number 9, Okay Go, Here It Goes Again.
I like that one.
That was pretty good. I can only imagine how much they had to rehearse to get that done. Number 8, Diet Coke plus Mentos. I think we all know what that's about.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
It's a particular video, though, that's like a timed thing. It's almost like the fountains at the Bellagio.
Oh, yeah, I've seen that one.
Number seven, The Evolution of Dance, which I'm sure we've all seen. Number 6, Afro Ninja. Have you seen this where the guy beans himself?
Yeah.
The classic.
Strangely, number 5 is the only one I've never even heard of. Do you know what this is? Numa Numa?
Oh, yeah.
I've never heard. I have to look at that after we're done here. I've never heard of it. It's number 5 YouTube video of the decade.
It's the kid lip syncing to like the Ukrainian pop song.
Yeah, it's a Moldovan group. I'm going to look at that afterwards. Okay, number 4 is the sneezing baby panda. Number 3, dramatic gopher.
Oh yeah.
Thanks, 4chan.
Number 2, Star Wars Kid. And no one wanted to take a guess at number 1?
Susan Boyle.
David
Susan
after Dennis.
Boyle on Britain's Got Talent.
Yes.
Really?
Wow.
Score.
Yep.
Score.
And she still lost.
And then she went on to have the number 1 female CD debut of all time.
Really?
But, you know, when she wins the VGA for best performance by a human female, then she'll have it all.
That's the one they all really want.
Anyway, let's move on to playlists now that we've covered YouTube's playlist. Gaz, what have you been playing?
I haven't been playing much of anything because I'm kind of in that Christmas wind down mode. But I've still been playing a little bit of new Super Mario Brothers, and I log into World of Warcraft every now and again. I actually haven't. I've been meaning to, but I don't want to download this. I know there's just been a massive patch. I don't want to have to deal with the Uber updating, but I've got to jump in and get that done. But no, my gaming for the year is kind of grinding to a halt. I think I'm done for 2009. Kind of going on vacation for Christmas. Apart from my iPhone, I don't have any games to take with me, so that's it. I've checked out of gaming for 2009. See you in 2010.
But you'll be back.
Of
course. Josh, why don't you tell us about that new patch? Tell Gaz what he's missing.
Gaz, you are missing out on everything.
What am I missing out? What can I do now?
For level 80s, you know, you got the Ice Crown instance, so you're going into Arthas. They're doing a really weird thing with the raids this time. I think there's like 12 bosses total. It's either 12 or 16. They're releasing them
so
in like
so you can finally fight Arthas as a boss now?
Not yet, because they're releasing them in groups of four, like with like a month and a half in between each release. So it's like Arthas may show up sometime in like April or May, it looks like. So
Ice Crown is obviously one thing, but there's like four different dungeons.
Yeah, there's four wings. It's kind of like Naxxramas, and they're just opening up the wings one at a time.
Right.
But the best feature, I think, since Wrath of the Lich King came in this patch, the dungeon finding group.
Oh, man.
Yes. It lets you join dungeon groups cross server. I believe it's within your battle group. Yeah, and you choose it in the tool. It's kind of like the battle ground thing. You can either choose a random one, which will give you bonus gold, XP, and a guaranteed blue if you complete, or you can choose one in specific, and then it queues you up, and it says, hey, we found you a healer tank and 3 DPS, and it's like, do you want to go in? And you hit yes, and then it teleports you inside the dungeon, and then you run it, and then once you're done, it teleports you back out, and it's incredible. I've been leveling a warrior. It's like 70 or 64 right now. I've probably done 20 instances in the past week, just doing one or two a night.
This obviously is good. I know they did this with Battlegrounds, but now you don't have to wait as long to find a group for a dungeon because you're not just going in with guys from your server, but from everywhere.
Exactly. And you don't need to go to a major city to try and find groups or anything. I mean, it's probably been the most I've waited is 2 minutes. Most of the times it's about 20 seconds for a group to pop up.
But, let me play devil's advocate here because I've played a lot of pugs. Doesn't this basically mean that it just now takes less time to have an awful time in the instance, know what they're doing, and you're just all going to die?
Honestly, that's what I thought. I've done probably about 20 since this came out. I've only had one last night that was just horrible. It just fell apart. It was terrible. But I had one where we ran Hellfire Ramparts. We finished it in 18 minutes, the entire dungeon. It was incredible. It was the best group I've been in maybe ever.
How exactly does this work? Is there just like an interface panel that I can bring up anywhere?
Yeah, it's like a button just like the Battlegrounds. You pull it up and it pulls up, and instead of the old looking for group tool, you can choose either random or it's either random or you select a specific dungeon. And if you do random, you get bonus XP, gold, and a free blue. And then a little menu, and then it says, we're finding you a group. And then it pops up and says, hey, we found a healer, a tank, and 3 DPS. Do you want to go in now? And then it shows yes. It tells you how many people in your group have said yes. And then when all five
It actually kind of takes care of the class balance for you as well.
Yeah. Yeah, it automatically finds it's one tank, one healer, 3 DPS. And then it teleports you into the dungeon from wherever you are. And then at any time, you can click the icon on your minimap and do teleport out of dungeon, and then it puts you back where you were.
Is this just for five mans? You made it sound like it's only five mans.
It's actually for raids too. I haven't tried doing any raids. I'm not sure if it'll automatically group and figure balance, but you can use it to do cross-server raids.
Does this mean that I can pull up this interface panel at any time?
Yep. And as long as you're like level 15.
Let's say this is the instance is like on the other side of the world. Does it just warp me over there?
Yep. Just like a battleground.
Huh. That's cool.
Yeah, it saves a ton of running.
Okay, so who's been playing something other than WoW?
No one.
Evan.
Good answer.
Evan doesn't play WoW. Evan, what have you been playing?
I definitely have. Dawn of Discovery. If that doesn't sound like an incredibly unfamiliar game, I like to think of it as a peace simulator. It's like an isometric kind of world or city builder, kind of a basic level, but it's set in like the 15th century. And it's wonderfully produced. It's kind of, honestly, at this point, one of the games that should have gotten a lot more attention. But I think because it doesn't have war or killing or, something ridiculous in it, maybe it did not, but,
Well, this one is a renamed sequel to the Anno 1701.
Yeah,
Which
is frankly a terrible name for a game, like a Latin word, because it means Anno Domini. like AD.
Yeah, the year. Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's a better name for the game. So, and you're saying the game is also good.
It's fantastic. I mean, I don't like those kinds of games. I don't play many of them. I don't play Civilization. Not that that's exactly the same genre as this, but it's incredibly relaxing. Like, first of all, like in the campaign, you're put in a role where kind of managing like a smaller portion of a larger kingdom. Like, you're just basically doing errands for this guy that's, trying to put a crusade together. So you're sending him fish and sending him ore and like making rope to him and then putting out your boat and then sending it over there and then putting wood on your boat and then bringing your boat to save this other ship that ran into rocks and, just doing these you know, little menial little tasks and feeling like you don't have the pressure of having to conquer the world or save things or, you know, make a perfect city and just making goods and trading them. And you can, you know, plan trading routes, things like that. And it's a beautiful game. Like, I caught myself just kind of watching my ship, you know, all with the camera all the way zoomed in and just kind of watching it. And there's like killer whales under the water that are hanging out and dolphins and swordfish. And
So you're saying all this and I don't have to do anything fun?
Something like that. But okay, if that doesn't get you, if killer whales don't get you into a town building game,
so are the killer whales killing things? Because that would be awesome.
They're not. There might be a mod out there, but the tutorial is excellent. Like, it just brings you in very organically. It doesn't say to do this, click this button to do this. You know, the voice work is fantastic and it's relaxing and kind of calming, and you feel like you're just doing these simple little things in, that are interesting and going at a slower pace, and I'm going to keep playing it.
Andy, what have you been playing?
Well, I finished up the Monkey Island episodes saga.
Don't spoil it for me. I haven't gotten a chance to play through the fifth one yet.
Well, I will say that it's just very satisfying, the fifth one. I really liked it a lot, and they really wrapped up all the characters and put a little nice bow on it for Christmas. That's what they did.
Aw.
Yeah.
But
I can't believe it's over.
Did they leave any kind of teaser for a second season?
Not that I recall. I could be forgetting something. It ends with a Sam and Max like teaser, so I think they're pushing that, the 2010 thing.
Yeah, and they're definitely doing Sam and Max in 2010, but I've still got my fingers crossed that they're going to do another season of Monkey Island, because I had a lot of fun with this one.
I know, me too. I totally think they should. And then I've just been getting my way through Dragon Age very gradually. So,
Eric, what have you been playing?
I did a bad thing and let Josh get me back into WoW.
Oh, yeah.
So that's a pusher.
Yep. So I've just been leveling my priest, and it's this new dungeon tool is incredible, because really, I mean, a healer should be with a group, and it just pops you right in a group. It's really great.
And Prentice, how about you?
Nothing new, just TF2 and Source. Same old.
Any big impressions from the last week of TF2?
No, it's pretty crazy. It's harder to kill soldiers just one-on-one as a demo, because I tried that out and my war contribution was like one after a few hours. So
and a few deaths on the soldier tally, I imagine.
Yeah.
You're a double agent. That's
saboteur, maybe.
Whatever happened to the friendship thing that was going around?
Well, I think the idea was, you know, that the war was in place to destroy the friendship, right? Is that,
yeah?
Am I interpreting that right?
Yeah. Yeah. Those voice files were kind of Easter egg teasers, almost, not actual like very heavily implemented things as we might have thought.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Friendships for sissies, anyways.
So I have been, well, I can't really talk about what I've been playing, so I'll talk about what I talked about last week, which was Saboteur, which is there's finally some good news on the ATI front there, because there was a kind of a disastrous bug that was in there at launch, where, you know, half of PC gamers, everybody who has an ATI card installed, could not play the game without making some serious tweaks that really made it run terribly. They had to disable like all but one CPU core, and the game really kind of relies on multi-core processing. So tomorrow, EA says they're finally putting out a beta patch that hopefully will fix the problem. They say it's showing some good results, but you know, it's still not quite done. It's still in beta. It will hopefully fix your problems. But yeah, it's great news because, I mean, this is like the first, you know, proof we've had that EA is actually working on a solution and not just, you know, hoping the problem goes away. Which it wouldn't. So it's good to see they're actually gonna fix it. And it's great because it is a very good game. And if it does fix it, I highly recommend that you play it. All right, so that will just about do it for us this week. If you want to subscribe to our magazine, please go to pcgamer.com and sign yourself up. If you want to add yourself as a friend on our Facebook page, there is a contest you can you enter just by joining. And that's Logan contributing to the podcast there. Yeah, you can enter to win a new PC just by joining our Facebook page. You can follow us on Twitter at pcgamer. And tune in next week and hear. Well, actually, maybe not next week. It might be next year until we get to talk to you guys again. And if that's the case, happy New Year, and we will see you all in 2010.
What did you have for lunch? Sounds rappery.
See if you can hear it.
touch of mushroom.
Yeah, actually.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Cool.
Pizza with mushrooms on it.
Oh, nice.
Hi.
How did you hear a mushroom?
I just took a stab in the dark there. That was completely a random guess.
Andy can also hear pudding. Yeah.
Well, that's more of a slurping sound. I can see hearing pudding more easily than hearing a mushroom. Did you hear like it make a beep 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 noise? Is that no?
Oh, I get it. Oh, I see what you did there.
This is the PC Gamer Podcast, episode 204 for Thursday, December. Okay, look at that. All right, let me try that one more time.
What's this thing about censorship in Australia?
I don't care about Australia.
Can we throw sprinkles in? Lots of sprinkles?